Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Zika, CRISPR, gravitational waves, atypical words that were heard quite a bit in 2016, words that we're going to talk about again as we look back on the year in science and medicine. Joining us is Carrie Goldberg, host of WBUR's Common Health blog. Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you, Deb.
So let's start with one of the big stories of the year, which scientists say proves that Albert Einstein was right. Gravitational waves do exist.
Right. So 100 years after he predicted them, Einstein was gloriously proven right in February. His theory of general relativity predicted that when anything with mass accelerates, it should create a kind of a wave in the fabric of space-time, sort of like a rock thrown into a pond, creating ripples on the water. And instruments here on Earth were able to detect the collision of two black holes that happened more than a billion years ago. The collision contorted space-time and sent like a really big ripple outward. And scientists at LIGO, the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory, announced in February that they were able to detect them.
And MIT physicists were involved.
Yes, from our provincial point of view, they were. And here on Radio Boston, we heard from MIT professor Nergis Mavalvala. She's a professor of astrophysics at MIT, and she's a member of the LIGO team that discovered the waves. She explained why it's taken so long to detect these waves.
It's taken 100 years because it was really hard to do. The technologies just weren't available until recently, and now they're here, and this is just the start. This is just the first ripple we've been able to detect. These detectors are going to get better, and we're just going to listen to more and more music from the universe.
So music from the universe, you gotta love it. And a great many people expect that someone's gonna win the Nobel Prize for this, or multiple people.
Okay, so from LIGO to another acronym, CRISPR. I think that this was the year, at least for me anyway, I started hearing a lot more about CRISPR.
Yeah, well, it's sizzling hot. And to anybody who hasn't been hearing about it, I'd say CRISPR is now a word it's probably worth knowing, an acronym. It stands for, okay, here's another fast reeling off.
Here we go.
Clustered regularly interspaced short palindromic repeats, CRISPR. And it refers to a pattern of DNA. But what it's really about is it's an incredibly powerful tool for editing genes. It's been sweeping labs around the world, and it's being used in everything from agriculture, like for engineering better crops, to medicine, like trying to cure genetic diseases, HIV, and more.
And CRISPR has been in the news recently because of a big fight over patents.
Right. So the fight is between the Broad Institute of MIT and Harvard here on the East Coast and UC, or University of California, Berkeley, out on the West Coast. Eric Lander, the director of the Broad Institute, spoke a bit about CRISPR here on Radio Boston in April. And he points out that this new CRISPR technology is based on a trick that bacteria have been using on their own for about a billion years to defend themselves against viruses. He says CRISPR lets them grab a little piece of DNA from the virus and use it kind of like a little note to self. They stuff it into their own set of DNA.
And that becomes a little library of reminders. And they're constantly copying those reminders onto the molecular equivalent of little yellow sticky notes. And whatever any piece of DNA is found in the cell, it compares it to the sticky note, it actually matches it up as DNA and RNA, and says, oh, if this matched something on my sticky note of bad things, I'm going to cut it.
So we got music of the universe, we got DNA sticky notes, yes. And with CRISPR, though, of course, now humans are figuring out how to use it in potentially very valuable new ways. And so the patent fight over who gets credit for these new applications has very high stakes. Earlier this month, the two sides presented their oral arguments before a patent court outside D.C., Washington, D.C. And the impression was that the judges grilled the Californian side a little more. But that's kind of like trying to read the tea leaves from the Supreme Court. Like, you can't really know.
So in the coming year, though, we can expect some sort of resolution in what people have been calling what the biggest biotech battle in memory.
I know. Yes, it's the Fraser versus Ali fight. We can expect a decision, but probably not a resolution, because these patent fights can drag on for a long time, sometimes even decades.
So more immediately then, just last week, there was some very good news about a vaccine against the Ebola virus.
Yes, very good news. Indeed, last Thursday, scientists announced major success with a vaccine against Ebola. They're calling it the first effective vaccine since the virus was discovered 40 years ago.
So impressive progress.
Yeah, and also there's been really impressive progress on malaria, which is, of course, a huge killer in Africa. And it's come not from a vaccine, but just from these sort of practical efforts to fight mosquitoes, get people to sleep under bed nets. It's now estimated that since the year 2000, deaths from malaria have dropped from about 800,000 a year to about 400,000 a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, this year did not bring good news about the Zika virus, where there were confirmed cases in Florida and Texas. Pregnant women were warned about traveling to some neighborhoods in Miami. And of course, the news from Latin America that babies born with microencephaly, more than 2,000 babies confirmed in Brazil.
Right. So, and you know, it's so problematic. It's so new. It was really arguably the biggest health news story of the year. And even the extent of the problem is still not clear. Like, the latest research suggests many babies whose mothers had Zika during pregnancy might have brain problems that are less obvious than microcephaly. But there is progress being made on developing a vaccine. In fact, there are several promising candidate vaccines that are starting to be tested in humans. Dr. Dan Baruch of Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center is one of the people at the forefront here. But his research is in lab animals, and he says it's hard to predict when we'll actually have a vaccine for humans that we know is safe and effective.
I can't give a date as to when a vaccine might be available for the general public, but I do think that our current data raise substantial optimism that the development of a vaccine might be possible and therefore accelerate the process of vaccine development.
And from a local point of view, Carrie, I suppose the positive side is that the mosquitoes that carry Zika don't reach Massachusetts.
Yes. Again, from our provincial point of view, that's something I'm very grateful for, although it's still an issue here. Our hospitals and doctors do see cases of it.
So let's talk about some medical advances that were accomplished in this past year.
Okay. So if you listen to On Point today, there's a whole hour on the new frontiers in transplants.
Right. Faces, hands, arms, maybe even a head soon?
Yes. Not here, though.
But this year also saw the first uterus transplant, although that ultimately failed because of an infection.
Right. And so big Boston hospitals are among those at the forefront of the transplant world. And in May, a Massachusetts General Hospital team performed the nation's first penis transplant. Tom Manning is the Halifax, Massachusetts man who got the surgery. He'd lost most of his penis to cancer, and he was really open about the operation.
You know, I'm not going to walk around feeling ashamed or anything for nothing. Sometimes bad things in your life happen, and you can go run and hide, or you can face them. And if you want a success story, you have to at least take the chance.
And the hope is that full function will be restored, even sexually. And I know the concept is maybe cringeworthy, but this really could be an important advance, especially for war veterans. And Deb, now I'd like to turn the tables for a moment and ask you about possibly the scariest story in American health and medicine today, this year, the opioid epidemic. So you've been covering that. How would you say it's looking?
Well, I would say the numbers, Carrie, don't look good. Numbers from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention show that nationally more than 52,000 people died from a drug overdose in 2015. About 63% of those deaths involved a prescription or illicit opioid. And in Massachusetts, the latest numbers suggest that on average, 5 people died every day from an overdose this past year. Surprisingly, that does not put Massachusetts among the states with the 5 highest death rates. But Massachusetts is considered to be among the states that had a significant increase in opioid overdose deaths from 2014 to 2015. And as we talked about earlier in the show, there is a new state law designed to help with the opioid epidemic.
So it's so striking. We're normally out front on health issues, but on this one, we're definitely not. Let's hope the new law makes a difference.
Well, Carrie Goldberg, host of WBUR's Common Health blog, thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.